Orville Freestone Jr., Sunday PM, December 9th, 2012.
In the first chapter of Hebrews, the opening words are that God at different times and in various ways revealed himself to the fathers by the prophets. It took 1,500 years for the Old Testament to be written and collected. It took less than 100 years for the New Testament to be lived out by the Lord and written by those who followed, and less than 300 years for them to be collected. In that old dispensation, when God revealed himself little by little, or as Isaiah put it, line upon line, line upon line, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little, he revealed himself, as we read, in many different ways. And one of the ways in which he revealed himself is, if I can find my notes here, one of the ways in which he revealed himself is in by revealing the different aspects of his name. In the law, the name of God was pronounced to be forever revered, and it was not to be taken in vain. The Jews, after the exile, took that so literally they ceased to pronounce that holy name, and they still won't to this day. When they refer to it, they either say the Blessed One or they say the name. God revealed himself to his people a number of times by revealing some aspect of his name. And one of these is in the 22nd chapter of Genesis. This, of course, is the chapter concerning the sacrifice, or the wood near sacrifice, of Isaac. And the name by which God revealed himself to Abraham is called, and Abraham called the name of that place Jehovah Jireh. As it is said to this day, in the mount of the Lord it will be seen. And Jehovah Jireh means the Lord will see, or see to it, or the Lord will provide. This was not the beginning of Abraham's pilgrimage of faith, for back in the Old Testament, in the 12th chapter of the book of Genesis, we read, "Now the Lord had said unto Noah, Get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto the land that I will show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee, and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee, and in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed." So Abram departed, as the Lord had spoken unto him, and went, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. Now this was a great step of faith on Abraham's part, to leave the land of his nativity, to go out, as we read in the book of Hebrews, not knowing where he would go, although here it says to go into the land of Canaan. That was the afterthought, after the fact. But we do read in Hebrews 11:8, that by faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out to a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed. He obeyed the revelation of God to him, and he went out not knowing whither he went. So in the fourth verse of chapter 12, Abraham departed in obedience to the revelation of God, as the Lord had spoken unto him. This was his obedience to the faith that he already had, because we read now, the Lord had said unto Abram, that is prior to this events of the 12th chapter. And then in the 7th verse of this same chapter, we read, the Lord appeared unto Abram and said, unto thy seed will I give this land. And there he builded an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. Now this was a work of faith on Abram's part. He builded an altar, and we read several times in this account of Abraham's life where he builded altars wherever he went. This was the work of his faith. And we read in the New Testament in Galatians 5:6 that, let's turn and read it, where Paul is arguing about circumcision. He said, for in Christ, Jesus Christ, there is neither circumcision availeth anything nor uncircumcision, but faith that worketh by love. Faith is active. Faith does work. It does not work the works for righteousness. Paul condemns that. But it is the works of faith. That is not works for righteousness, but works that result from faith. So Abraham showed unto all his faith when he builded altars unto the Lord in the midst of a land that was filled only, so far as he knew, with idolatry. Then when we come to the 22nd chapter of Genesis, we come to the trial of his faith. And we read also in Hebrews 11:17 that by faith, Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac, and he that had received the promises offered up his only son. So this was the trial of Abraham's faith. And let us consider the trial of Abraham's faith, because as we read in the New Testament, our faith will be tried. Peter speaks of the trial of our faith to prove not that we had faith, but to prove that it was genuine. And so, reading over this 22nd chapter of Genesis, it's a beautiful chapter, but it's a heart-wrenching chapter too, when you place yourself in Abraham's place. I think that was a very unique sermon that our brother Crook preached today, putting ourselves into the place of Mary and of the others at that time. Put yourself into the place of Abraham as we read this and see what would have been your thoughts and how would it have affected you. And it came to pass after these things that God did test Abraham, not to see if he had faith that would endure, but to prove that he did have such faith. And he said unto Abraham, Abraham, and he said, Behold, here I am. And he said, Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of. Can you imagine Abraham's shock? He waited 40 years after the first promise for this son, whom God said would be his heir. I can't comprehend that kind of shock. But even so, it's even a greater shock than that. Because back in the land of Ur, when God first spoke to Abraham, we read these words. Now these are the generations of Terah. Terah begat Abraham, Nahor, and Haran, three brothers. And Haran begat Lot. And Haran died before his father Terah in the land of his nativity in Ur of the Chaldees. Now the King James does not really bring out fully what this means, because most of the modern translations that I have consulted, and the Hebrew text is very definite, that Haran died in the presence of his father. That is, his life was taken in his father's presence. Now, Abraham's Ur was much earlier than when it was known as Chaldea. It was the very early time in the Mesopotamia, lower Mesopotamia, and it was very, very idolatrous. Human sacrifice was common then. And just as with the Aztecs and the Mayans of Central America who offered human sacrifices, it was always the youngest and most beautiful girl, or it was also the youngest and the bravest warrior who were chosen for sacrifice. And it was the same in Mesopotamia at this time. So this is what increases the shock to Abraham of God's command to him. He saw his brother murdered in idolatrous sacrifice. And when God told him to get out of Ur, he was ready to go. He acted by faith. He did not know where he was going, but he wanted to get away from all associated with that. Some of this is speculation, of course, but it's well-founded in history and in archaeology. So can you imagine what thoughts went through Abraham's mind? I thought I got away from this. I thought that the God Most High was different in his revelation from this. But his faith was firm, and he left the land of his nativity. But now God tells him to offer his son up as a sacrifice. We say he did it by faith because coming back to Hebrews 11 again in 11:17, by faith Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac. And he that had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said that in Isaac shall thy seed be called. Accounting that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from whence he received him in a figure. That was the faith of Abraham. And as they went on this trek, there was plenty of time for him to mull over what was about to happen. For he left Hebron to go to Mount Moriah, which was about a little less than 20 miles north of Hebron. And they were walking. And Isaac was carrying the wood for the sacrifice. And Abram was walking along, carrying the knife for the slaughter, and in the other hand, the clay vessel holding the embers from which the fire would be built. Imagine the thoughts that went through Abraham's mind on that 20-mile trek, and imagine how he dreaded what he knew would come when Isaac asked him. Abraham rose up early in the morning and saddled his ass and took two young men with him and Isaac his son and clave the wood for the burnt offering. And they rose up and went unto the place which God told him. And on the third day he lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said unto the young men, Abide ye here while with the ass, while I and the lad go yonder and worship and come again to you. And Abraham took the wood and the burnt offering and laid it upon Isaac his son, and he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and they went both of them together. And Isaac spake unto Abraham, and I'm sure Abraham dreaded this, knowing what was coming. Abraham, his father, and said, My father. And he said, Here am I, my son. And he says, Behold, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? And Abraham said unto him, God will provide himself a lamb for the burnt offering. And they went on, both of them, together. Now, Abraham wasn't just putting Isaac off. He didn't know what would happen. He fully expected to offer Isaac. But he said that in faith. God will provide for himself a lamb for the offering. And they came to the place which God had told him of. And Abraham built an altar there. He built many altars, as we have seen, and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar. I wonder what Isaac was thinking. And imagine his submission to his father to permit his father to bind him and prepare him to be the sacrifice. But Abraham was still going by faith, and they came to the place which God had told him of. And Abraham built an altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son. Isaac coming within a stroke of the arm of death. Abraham coming right up to the point of the sacrifice, still in faith. And the angel of the Lord called to him out of heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham." And he said, "Here am I." And he says, "Lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him, for now I know that thou fearest God, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from him." That thou fearest God, was this not by now, not obvious in Abraham's pilgrimage? But think about the family that Abraham left behind in Haran when he left his family there to move on to the land of Canaan. When Abraham sent Eliezer back to Haran for a wife for Isaac, they were still semi-idolatrous there. There's no record that they bowed down themselves to the image of Chemosh or to the moon or anything like that. But they had little household gods, teraphim they called them. They were little household shrines, very much like household shrines in many people's homes today, where they burn candles to a figure. And Rebekah had, when Rachel, yeah. When Rachel and Leah and Jacob's greater family were going back to the Promised Land, she had those little household gods in her possession. Maybe not to worship, maybe not to set up, because whoever possessed those household gods was the rightful heir of their father. But it was a kind of idolatry to depend on something like that. So in this trial of Abraham's faith, he proved he did love God Most High. He did totally reject the idolatry of Ur and of Syria, and this was the whole point of God's trial to him, to forever draw a line between Abraham and his descendants, between idolatry and themselves. Many times after that, his descendants did turn to idolatry. And that is the reason why they were driven out of their land. God knows how to chasten his people. After the Babylonian exile, the descendants of Abraham never again were idol worshipers. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in a thicket by his thorns. Now, if you can imagine a ram caught by his thorns, this is the particular ram goat, that is so beautiful and such a popular animal in the East, the ibex. And imagine an animal like that, a wild animal, a very fleet animal, caught in a thicket and being quiet. Abraham, and I'm sure Isaac too, were so engrossed in their sorrow, so engrossed in the events that they didn't notice this. until God showed him this ram that he had provided. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering in the stead of his son. And Abraham called the name of the place Jehovah Jireh. This was a word added to the name of God as an adjective, becoming a part of that name, a revealing name of God. Jireh, as it is in the Hebrew, Jireh, means he will see. It can mean he will see that he beholds. It can mean he will see too. If you ask me to do something and I say, I'll see to that, you understand what I mean. That's what this means also, carries this thought. And hence, by extension, it means God will provide. And not only was this the ultimate test of Abraham's loyalty and his faith, but it was the ultimate test of God's faithfulness to Abraham. He did provide. He provided a substitute, and therefore it is called Jehovah Jireh, as is said to this day in the mountain of the Lord. It shall be seen. So Mount Moriah was known to Abraham and his descendants as Jehovah Jireh, which only by happenstance, perhaps, would we say, happened to be what would later be called Mount Zion. And the rock upon which Abraham built his altar was the rock upon which the later temple of Solomon was built. And the recent archaeological investigations in that area have concluded that it was the rock upon which the Holy Ark of the Covenant was set in the holiest of holies. What is the lasting lesson in this? Well, it was far-reaching, for it showed the faithfulness of God. He can be depended upon. But also, it established the principle of substitutionary sacrifice, which was later incorporated into the law of Moses, and in antitype was forever sealed. And the sacrifice of God's Son, which he did not spare. For God spared not his only Son, we read in Paul's writing. So the institution of substitutionary sacrifice becomes one of the chief doctrines of our Christian faith. Jesus died for me.